I got to hit you with Dr. King. Honorable Elijah Muhammad, Marcus Garvey, A. Philip Randolph. Here's what I write. Now, some of this, and I'll get to the point, is in my new book, The Entrepreneurial Secret, because I have to explain what a business firm is. It is not a place for greedy people to chase profits. That's not what it is. It's essentially a society and an instrument for people to form, to unite and pool different forms of capital, most of which have nothing to do with money. So here's what I write. When Dr. King emerged as a national leader, the issue framed as capital versus labor had evolved into the context of a larger geopolitical Cold War, which depicted the matter as a capitalism versus communism struggle. Any major economic discussion taking place, it seemed at that time, had to be addressed in this context. Everyone was being pressured to make their analysis of economics and politics conform to these two polar opposites. The young Baptist preacher from Alabama, named after his father, not appearing uncomfortable with the discussion or forced options, would do his best to suggest a third way, one that would pull the best from each system and leave behind their weaknesses, as he argued it. In his 1967 book, Where Do We Go From Here? Chaos or Community? Man, this is so important. I wish you all would go tell someone what I'm talking about. But I want to get to the root of why there is no community development in Black America, although there are a lot of smart intellectuals, professionals, and even economists. Nothing that we do produces real sustainable development. I'm talking about Dr. King now. In 1967, his book, Where Do We Go From Here? Chaos or Community? He makes the case resisting uniformity and offering another option. Here's what Dr. King wrote in 1967. He says, the revolution of values must go between traditional capitalism and communism. We must honestly admit that capitalism has often left a gulf between superfluous wealth and abject poverty, has created conditions permitting necessities to be taken from the many to give luxuries to the few, and has encouraged small-hearted men to become cold and conscienceless, having no conscience. That's what it means. So that, like dives before Lazarus, they are unmoved by suffering, poverty-stricken humanity. The profit motive, this is Dr. King, the economist. Dr. King says, the profit motive, when it is the sole basis of an economic system, encourages cutthroat competition and selfish ambition that inspire men to be more I-centered than thou-centered. Equally, communism reduces men to a cog in the wheel of the state. The communists may object, Dr. King says, saying that in Marxian theory, the state is an interim reality and that it will wither away when the classless society emerges. This is true in theory, Dr. King writes, but it is also true that while the state lasts, it is an end in itself. Man is a means to that end. He has no inalienable rights. His only rights are derived from and conferred by the state. Under such a system, the fountain of freedom runs dry, restricted are men's liberties of press and assembly, his freedom to vote and his freedom to listen and to read. This is Dr. King's critique of communism. He goes on to say, listen carefully, I could not bear witness more strongly to Dr. Martin Luther King on this. The Reverend King Jr. says, truth is found neither in traditional capitalism nor in classical communism. Each represents a partial truth. Capitalism fails to see the truth of collectivism. Communism fails to see the truth in individualism. Capitalism fails to realize that life is social. Communism fails to realize that life is personal. The good and just society is neither the thesis of capitalism nor the antithesis of communism, but a socially conscious democracy which reconciles the truths of individualism and collectivism. Now, Michael Moore, to me, doesn't really address or acknowledge the role of what Dr. Martin Luther King is calling individualism, or what I would call a self-enlightened interest, what Jude Winiski would call an individual self-interest. Now here's what I write. This is unpublished. I did not want this book to come out first for reasons that I'll maybe one day will get into. Here's what I write. We will never know how much traction Dr. King would have made in the black community representing his good and just society as a third way or synthesis even of communism and capitalism. By the time Dr. King was assassinated in 1968, for many of those blacks influenced by socialism and communism, the corporation had become synonymous with capitalism, and any effort to promote business, entrepreneurship, and economic development would inspire allegations that the one doing so was a petty bourgeois black nationalist. The non-racial language in that term was that of Marx, but the application was inspired by E. Franklin Frazier's Black Bourgeois, published in 1957. Pardon me. Perhaps with an assist from Frantz Fanon, whose Wretched of the Earth was a staple of blacks who identified themselves comfortably as radicals. Among those claiming Mr. Fanon's teachings as analytical guidance were the Black Panthers, the militant self-help political organization and community who indicted capitalism as forcefully as anyone ever has. So what I'm saying is, folks, Michael Moore, you know what I mean? Let me hit you with the applause. My brother, Michael, you did a good job. I'm feeling the movie. But if you really want to get to the heart of what's economic development and what's preventing it or inhibiting it in the black community, you do have to start looking at what I'm talking about. E. Franklin Frazier, Dr. Manning Marble, Dr. Martin Luther King, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, A. Philip Randolph, Marcus Garvey, Black Enterprise Magazine. That's our conversation, so to speak. I hope this is not boring to some people, but I can't. I saw the Monique show. I talked to my father about this. Somebody made an anonymous suggestion that I focus my, what do you call that, my target, my lens on the Monique show. I have watched the Monique show, bits and pieces. What do we need to do about the Monique show, y'all? I see the Wanda Sykes show is coming next. I like Monique. I feel she's very sensitive. I love her heart. I just don't understand why we have to do the bouncing around, the body jiggling, booty shaking, the eyes bugging out. I don't understand why that is essential to a talk show for someone as sensitive or as intelligent as her. I don't understand this. What is it with the black entertainress, talk show host, that they have to, Star calls it cooning and buffooning. I really can't think of a better phrase. Maybe a little strong, but the coonery and the buffoonery. I don't understand why you have to do the dancing, the eyes bucking, the body shaking, the wilding out. Why does that have to be part of the show or humor? Why is the black comedian have to make the eyes big? The voice has to go through all. I saw Tracy Moore. Was that his name, Tracy Morgan? Very funny brother. But what's up with all this that? We know, man. What is that? I mean, talk to me. What is that? Martin with the I'm getting off track, man. I need help. I don't understand why that has to be a feature. The buck dancing. All right, let me get back to the importance of understanding E. Franklin Frazier and Marx for yourself and through an indigenous lens, not through some folks in outside of the community, I'd say. If you're going to become a Marxist, read Karl Marx direct. Don't be following no interpreters. So I write, if one is looking for the greatest influencers providing the intellectual firepower casting the greatest suspicion on black entrepreneurship and those promoting it as a vehicle for mass economic development, it is not necessary to look any further than two brilliant black men, E. Franklin Frazier and Dr. Manning Marble. It was E. Franklin Frazier, even more so than the two previously mentioned political giants, and this is previous material, A. Philip Randolph and W.E.B. Du Bois, who deserves credit for providing the intellectual arguments and analytical critique which black radicals, progressive communists, and socialists have used most frequently to rebut calls for mass entrepreneurship and individual and collective economic advancement on the basis of business activity and capital accumulation. E. Franklin Frazier's book essentially defines bourgeoisie activity as business activity and anything that enables it. To him, anything associated with black entrepreneurship and individual black economic gain, in certain respects, even that coming from an employee, is deserving of bourgeoisie status. Mr. Franklin does not view what took place beginning in the 1890s, the mass bet on black entrepreneurship as the other sources of capital were denied, as positive. Rather, to him, this time period largely marks a negative, the birth of an economic class in black America. A sampling of Mr. Frazier's magnum opus, Black Bourgeoisie or Black Bourgeois, sums up the case that he made that became so widely embraced. On why he wrote his book, E. Franklin Frazier writes. See, you know, sometimes I don't think people really understand what drives me or motivates me. Don't ask me to talk about no topic if you're not going to deal with it in depth. That's like my modus operandi, my MO. I mean, I'm down for entertainment. You all know I love all that stuff. But if you're going to deal with something like community development, economic development, Michael Moore is just an excuse for me to get into something deeper. Now, if Michael Moore is the deepest you can go on this subject and you call yourself a concerned black intellectual professional entrepreneur, then you just have to, you got to get a late pass. You was not listening to Public Enemy. It's maybe a little too meaty for the show, but let me read this last part. On why he wrote his book, The Black Bourgeois, E. Franklin Frazier writes, "The primary purpose of this study is to make a sociological analysis of the behavior, the attitudes, and the values of the black bourgeois, a group which began to play an important role among American Negroes during the past two decades. Our analysis will deal with two aspects of the life of the black bourgeois, the first being the real or objectively existing economic condition and social status of the black bourgeois in the United States, and the second being the standards of behavior and values of the isolated social world of this segment of the Negro population, which has come into existence as a consequence of racial discrimination and racial segregation. The first part of the study, which deals with the real status of the black bourgeois, will be concerned first with the process by which a black bourgeois has emerged in the United States as a result of the slow and difficult occupational differentiation of the Negro population." I mean, this is deep what he's writing. He's saying that the black bourgeois emerged in part because of the lack of diversity, the lack of a real black economy. And that is, and he's right. And we still have a lack of occupational differentiation. That's why we have so many barbershops and beauty salons. But there's economic reasons for that. Certain whites did not want to get into the barbershop business. There were catering, restaurants. There were certain businesses and industries that white Americans left for blacks. So blacks have a monopoly that continues to this day. You got to ask yourself a question. Why isn't there not been a takeover of the black barbershop by some corporation? Goes back to slavery. They gave us that monopoly. Anyway, against this background will be analyzed the present economic basis of this class, especially as regards the recent changes that have occurred in the economic position of the Negro in the American economy. The study of the economic position of the black bourgeois will include a realistic appraisal of the significance of Negro business in the American economy as well as in the economic life of the Negro. In this part of the study, attention will also be given to the education of the Negro, since education has been the principal social factor responsible for the emergence of the black bourgeois. I'll give you some more. In explaining how the black bourgeois developed, E. Franklin Frazier writes, "If one would ferret out the roots of the black bourgeois in the United States, one would have to study the varied and sporadic efforts of the Negroes, who were free before the Civil War to acquire wealth. However, it was not until after emancipation that the spirit of modern business enterprise really took root among the Negro elite. This was due to their association with the Freedmen's Bank, which was established to encourage thrift among the newly emancipated slaves. While the initiation of the Negro elite in the field of business enterprise ended with the failure of the Freedmen's Bank, the spirit of business enterprise engendered by this experience was never lost. I mean, the Freedman Bank is such a heavy thing. I deal with it in this unpublished book. It actually helped to create a professional class of professional black. Hold on, I'm not talking right. Let me get a sip of coffee. Hold on. Okay, the Freedman's Bank helped to create a class of black financial professionals. I said it right. We're getting to that, Frederick Douglass, one day. While the initiation of the Negro elite in the field of business enterprise ended with the failure of the Freedman's Bank, the spirit of business enterprise engendered by this experience was never lost. Whereas an increasing number of Negroes continued to set up small stores and shops and a few larger undertakings, primarily to serve the needs of the segregated Negro communities, it was mainly in the field of banking that the new spirit of business enterprise manifested itself. Negro leaders in all areas of community life, education, religion, and fraternal organizations began to organize their own banks in a number of cities of the South. Let me skip some things. Here's my comment. E. Franklin Frazier's definition and depiction of the black bourgeois is interesting in many ways. He equates the increased specialization and professionalism that resulted from black migration from the agrarian economy in the South and entrepreneurship with business. But because the economics of jobs, entrepreneurship, and what he describes as white philanthropy aren't of a large enough scale, he calls Negro business a myth. And he marginalizes black efforts at capital accumulation by pooling savings from earnings, most notably in banking institutions, which he sees as the foundation of the bourgeois business enterprise. So part of the bias against banking, even in our community, while we don't build up black-owned banks, a lot of it has to do with what I'm just saying. E. Franklin Frazier saw that as the foundation of a black bourgeois. So I say, but his conclusion and his main complaint with this group is that they are not connected in idea or reality with the majority of black people. E. Franklin Frazier's critique in black bourgeois is insightful in many respects, and it provides an interesting identification and deconstruction of black politics, culture, and economics and where they meet. But it does not represent a program, an agenda, or a model for economic development. At times, it appears that Mr. Frazier's harshest criticisms are reserved for the professional class and not entrepreneurs. In fact, his thinly veiled respect for Marcus Garvey's economic program, in which in many respects mirrors a program of development through what he called Negro business, entrepreneurship and capital accumulation, might be an indication that Mr. Frazier's deepest concern with the bet on black entrepreneurship in America thus far was that he saw it as a reaction to segregation and discrimination rather than a proactive program of nationalism. Man, I could keep going. I'm going to stop right there. If you have any comments, if you've read Black Bourgeois, you let me know. I'm going to leave this discussion of the Black Bourgeois. I have a bone to pick with VH1, a beef. How could you do that to EPMD last night? We're headed into hour number three. I was in Jamaica, Queens. I was on the LIRR, the Long Island Railroad. We'll talk about that. Come on, Def Jam, VH1.
But a microphone, don't stop. I'm not finished yet. You said I'm not the E. You wanna make it bright. Remember this lounge, you in the danger zone. I figured you would. Now leave me alone. You pick an innuist on the four leaf clover to be the E double E. Over and over. You intrigued by the way I do my thing. What? We got the mic high and make it swing. I have the capability to rap and chill. Coax and tax and see. You tend to act ill. It's like a stick of smack.
If you felt EPMD got jerked last night on and disrespected on the PH1 honors, let me know. I think Reverend Run was responsible for the signing of EPMD to Def Jam. He heard, I think, this song. Said it was the best rap group he ever heard.
I'm in the boggling state. I can't concentrate. I make a move like chess, and I yell checkmate. You know why I get Xania and Xania? Because of EPMD, man.
I'm sorry, I had to bring it back from the top.
Yo, don't give a nothing but a microphone. Don't stop, I'm not finished yet. You said I'm not the E, you wanna make a burp.
You are tuned in to The Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel.
You pick and you whisk on the four-leaf clover to be the E-double-E. Over and over, you intrigued by the way I do my thing.
Do what?
We got the mic high and make a swing.
I have the capability to rap and chill. Coax and tax and see who tend to act ill. It's like a stick of smack. Smack me and I'll smack your back. I get goosebumps when the baseline thumps. The sucker empty on ride. Now it's time for lunch. When I'm cooling on the scene,
right.
I notice one thing, I'm not bound.
I mean, I'm sorry. I'm biased toward EPMD. I think this was the first rap album to ever debut number one on the Billboard R&B charts, 88.
I can't concentrate. I make a move like chess and I your checkmate. Either why I get Xania and Xania because...
If you have any comments about Dr. Manning Marble, E. Franklin Frazier, what Dr. Martin Luther King said about communism and capitalism, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's teaching, Marcus Garvey, we can chop it up. 14th anniversary of the Million Man March. I can't think of a better time to get to the heart of why there isn't enough community development. I'll read the article, finalcall.com. Minister Farrakhan has set the tone and the theme for the Holy Day of Atonement. And by the way, what song was that where Jay-Z said, I prayed on the Day of Atonement?
You are tuned in to The Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel.
Praying like a prey when the fox in action. I smell blood, no time for maxing. Camouflage in the green, my back is arc. Plus you in trouble because it's after dark. My eyes closed like Steve Porter. I got you in the square. I will let you run. Nah, that ain't fair. So I clear my vision so I can spot him, snatch him up by the neck and say, I got him.
By now, MCs, you're in over your head. My rhymes are hungry, but they haven't been fed. The process of elimination's quite simple. Let you grow like a blackhead and pop you like a pimple. Slice you like lettuce, toss you like a salad. Revoke your empty license if your rhymes invalid. As we go on, sucker empty sound whacker. Like a parrot, Holly wants a cracker.
There was a rap contest, nothing we can handle. At a house that had the mic on the mantle. Looked at the DJ and said, may I? Lit it up like the 4th of July. Because I float like a butterfly, sing like a bee. No, I'm the E of EP. EMD. I have a strong point of view on the way things run. Just shut up and listen and learn, my son.
I'm draw that ass like bounty. The quicker picker up, I tell you up front. You're nothing but a sucker. The style we're using is no doubt copacetic. You try to bite and yet sound pathetic. Design my bonds like a tailor. Floating like a sailor as the peak gets stronger. Inches get staler. Not bragging, not tagging. Surely not bagging. Empty surrender. Raise the flags and
sobering, stimulating, and hot. It's the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee program.
I think recently I've been depressed. I don't sleep good. I think too much.
Luke, you ever hear the saying, the unexamined life is not worth living?
Yeah. Maybe the examined one isn't either.
Oh, no, come on, don't talk like that. Has this got something to do with Kurt Cobain?
Sober, stimulating, and hot. It's the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee program. You are tuned in to The Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel. Cedric Muhammad. Cedric Muhammad. Cedric Muhammad. Cedric Muhammad. You are tuned in to The Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel.
Cedric Muhammad.